Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1 with Opel and the all-new Zero Emissions Corsa E with a range of up to 337 kilometres, it's simply electric.
Brian, thank you very much. If you were listening to the programme yesterday, you might remember that we spoke about the disappearance of Annie McCarrick. Now, the Gardaí would like us to reiterate that if you have any information on the disappearance of Annie McCarrick, you can make contact with the investigation team at Irishtown Garda Station, and the number is 01666 9600. The Garda confidential line is 1-800-666-111 or any Garda station. They're stressing that the investigation is very much open. They're active pursuing any new information that comes to their attention, and that alleged sighting of Annie McCarrick at Johnny Fox's pub is still an open line of inquiry. So a reminder there, anyone who has information on that disappearance, it was 27 years ago, but you never know, Gardaí are still seeking information and it is an open investigation. Coronavirus should be let spread amongst people below the age of 60 in a controlled way. This is according to Sweden's former chief epidemiologist Dr. Johan Giesecke, who is this morning addressing the Dáil's COVID-19 committee. Indeed, you may have just heard him there in the news bulletin. Sweden, which controversially decided against lockdowns, is now seeing early signs of an increase in COVID cases. And yesterday, health officials floated the idea of imposing new measures in the country's capital. So, should we be taking any advice from the Swedish example? Well, to get a sense of what things are like there and elsewhere around the world, I'm joined on the line by Catherine Edwards, who's Europe editor for the local news website in Stockholm. We're also going to go to Spain, we're going to go to Edinburgh and to China as well. But first, Catherine, if I can come to you. Sweden has been cast into the global spotlight. It's often held up as an example, its lenient approach to the pandemic. But how are things looking there right now?
So Sweden was very hard hit in the early stages of the pandemic, and some people were quite quick to draw a link between the really high death rates here and the lack of any full lockdown. And then over summer, we saw quite a sharp drop in the new infections that lasted throughout kind of July and August. And now it's just starting to see the first signs of an uptick again, not everywhere, but in a few regions, including Stockholm, which is especially worrying because Stockholm was the area which was hit first and has had almost half of the total cases and total deaths in Sweden.
And is there a strong suggestion that some sort of additional measures we introduced around Stockholm?
Yes, it could be the first time that Sweden introduces region-specific rules, which would be interesting because earlier in the pandemic, authorities were saying that's not very effective because it's tough to control people coming in and out of regions and it gets confusing. We don't know yet exactly what those measures could be. We're likely to find out in the next few days, but it might be things like isolating if a family member is sick or has confirmed coronavirus, or it could be things like wearing face masks on public transport or stronger recommendations to work from home, things like that.
And this notion, Catherine, of personal responsibility placed on individuals in Sweden, that has seemed to work quite well, would you agree?
Well, it's definitely been what the strategy has relied on, is high trust in the authorities, because apart from a few things like bans on visiting care homes, almost everything has been only a recommendation. So people are expected to adapt it to their own circumstances, like workplaces, work out what works best for them. For now, the high trust in the authorities still seems to be more or less there in the opinion polls. But I think the Public Health Agency, which has led the response, has around 2/3 of the population still saying that they're doing a good job.
And what about mask wearing?
Well, that's been another area where Sweden has really stuck out, even from its Nordic neighbours. So there hasn't been any recommendation to wear a mask, although, in recent weeks and months, authorities have opened up to it a little bit more, saying it might be a measure to go along in regions where cluster outbreaks happen. But they've really stressed that it should be a complement to the other measures. And the worry is that people might wear masks and get a false sense of security. And for that, they've really pointed to the countries that have introduced face mask requirements and have ended up seeing a rise in cases anyway.
Okay, Catherine, thank you for joining us from Stockholm. Let's go to Spain now, and Sarah Morris is correspondent in Spain for France 24 Television. Sarah, thank you for joining us today. Madrid is where the big problem is at the moment, isn't it?
That's right. The regional government has had to take extra measures this week, really, to introduce a partial lockdown in some areas because the measures of the rate of coronavirus have hit over 1,000 per 100,000 residents. And that compares really much higher than the European average. To give you an idea, a place like Ireland has got over 70, so 70 compared to 1,000 in some of these neighbourhoods. And basically these people who live in these neighbourhoods are being told, don't go out unless you have an extremely good justification, like work or a medical emergency or taking your child to school. And really the Spaniards are scratching their heads as to why Madrid has again become the epicentre of the second wave in Europe, and Spain with much higher figures than European neighbours, despite very strict rules on wearing face masks. It's very unusual if you walk around any street in Spain to see anybody without a face mask now. They're compulsory on public transport, in shops, on the metro, anywhere that you go, and even in the street if there's no one around.
And what about hospitalizations and people being admitted to ICUs? Is that also on the increase?
It certainly is. It's gone up to about 17% on average in Spain, but a place like Madrid has 36% of those intensive care beds occupied. A place like La Rioja, where they make wine, has actually gone up to 57%. And the doctors are really saying more action needs to be taken to stop the kind of collapsing that happened back at the really harsh point in the first wave back in March and April. I should point out that the death toll is not as high. Then I think we saw on the worst days about 950 people dying in Spain from the virus. And now yesterday we saw a record for the second wave, 241 deaths. So they're not back at the worst peak, but still the deaths and the hospital occupations are going up at an alarming rate as far as doctors are concerned.
And there's been some opposition and reluctance to adopt the latest measures.
That's right. There's been a lot of protests in some of these southern neighbourhoods in Madrid, because basically they hit working class neighbourhoods first, very populated areas where people live in small flats. Lots of immigrants live in those areas. And some of the residents feel that they've been scapegoated, and they say that the measures are even racist and classist. There'll be actually a big protest being called on Sunday against these measures, with some of these people saying, why are they allowed to go to work in wealthier regions and serve, for instance, drinks to wealthier people in Madrid, but can't actually take their children out to the parks? So they're very controversial, these latest measures.
So it hasn't been established yet, has it, why the increase is happening in those areas where it is?
No, there's lots of different speculation, Claire, and a number of scientists have called in The Lancet in a couple of open letters for an independent investigation. They basically say it's probably a cocktail of reasons. Spaniards have very close-knit families. They see their grandparents on a regular basis, and they had a very long lockdown. And many Spaniards think since things have opened up, Spaniards have been keen to meet up with their families. Young people have been going out again. Spain is famous for young people hanging out, drinking in parks and on the beaches. That is, in theory, banned. It's called botellón, but it's been going on, and a lot of the outbreaks have come and been blamed on young people and family gatherings.
Sarah Morris in Spain, thank you for joining us and bringing us up to speed with what's happening there. Let's go to Professor Linda Bold, Professor of Public Health at Edinburgh University. Linda, it's nice to talk to you again.
Good morning, Claire.
You heard there the update, or at least some of it, from Spain, and people are scratching their heads as to why case numbers are rising in certain parts of Madrid and not others, and it's causing some social unrest from what Sarah is seeing. Does that mirror what you're seeing?
Yes, I mean, I think we're observing, and I think actually Ireland as well, our urban areas mostly have been more hard hit. In the west of Scotland, we've had over 1.5 million people under local restrictions. So that it certainly seems to affect some communities more than others, and sadly, the more deprived communities, indeed across the UK, are affected. And that's a legacy of you know, we heard there about housing, but also people with more underlying conditions, many more key workers in those communities. So those are the ones we have to protect. In terms of unrest, not seeing that to the extent that they are in Spain and indeed some other countries, but we have had a number of protests, including in Scotland, actually. And I am concerned that politicians need to get the communication right so they take populations with them and they don't stoke division, which is always there and can spark up again when people are obviously unhappy.
And Nicola Sturgeon went further than Boris Johnson did last night. She's saying that you should not visit other households indoors.
That's correct. And of course, again, the devolved nations, including Northern Ireland, similar there. The devolved nations have been more cautious through this pandemic. Of course, they have limited control over some of the central things like testing, which is a UK-wide system. And also, sadly, they don't have the fiscal powers, or the government. Some governments would like to have those fiscal powers to, for example, provide more benefits for people who are self-isolating. But in terms of the household issue, I've seen some of the data from our testing and tracing system here, and it's absolutely clear that those household mixing, household interactions, are implicated in some of the index cases. We've seen some of the recent rises. But like Ireland, most of this, I'm looking at what's happening in Dublin now, is just caused by the fact that we've opened up societies again, haven't we? And the virus was never eliminated, so it has a chance to spread again.
I was asking Sarah about the level of hospitalisations and in particular admissions to ICU. Do you have any information on that?
Yeah, so ours are creeping up. That's the worrying thing. I mean, the projections at UK level were that if we didn't take action now, we would have large numbers of cases every day, and by October we could have tens of thousands of cases by October, and we would be looking at around 200 hospital admissions per day by mid-November. Those are projections. In Scotland, they've been inching up. We've had modest rises both in relation to people in hospital. We've currently got 73. And remember, we've got a population of about 10 million here. We've only got 10 in ICU, but it's just been creeping up over the last week or so. So we're seeing the same trend in France, which you may have covered earlier in the program. Hospital admissions up a third over the last 2 weeks. And in fact, case numbers in the over 75 up by four times. So we can see the trajectory, and it's about preventative action now.
One of our newspapers here today, the Irish Independent, is reporting that Scotland has asked Ireland if this country had spare COVID-19 testing capacity. Now, I think we were asked before by England and the answer was no last week, so I assume it'll be the same today with that request. How is the Scottish testing system coping right now?
It's under real pressure, and it is a two-tiered system, just briefly, Claire. So the first and biggest bit is a UK-wide system, what we call our lighthouse labs, which are based in universities or private companies. And they are the labs that are testing the samples from the general population most of the time. And that's obviously really can fluctuate with demand. So when our schools went back 3 weeks ago, there was a big surge. And when the English schools went back last week, there was another big surge. So that is really under pressure. The other bit which is doing better is our in-house Scottish NHS labs that test the care workers, NHS workers, and some other sectors. They seem to be all right at the moment. But we have these targets. I'm sure Ireland probably has them as well, to have many, many, many more tests done as we head into October and November. And it's a bit disappointing that, the capacity we'd intended to have now isn't there. And so it's going to be very ambitious to get to the levels that we actually need.
We have a lot of controversy here around schools and how positive cases in schools are being dealt with some teachers saying that they may have a positive case in their class, but yet they're told to go back in and continue teaching. I have messages here in front of me about stress and anxiety amongst teachers who are really suffering, they say, on the back of this. Is it the same in Scotland? Are teachers stressed? Is the education system stressed with how they're coping with this, how they're dealing with it?
So the teaching unions continue to remain very concerned. And of course, we've got some teachers who were previously shielding or are more vulnerable, and they're deeply worried. I've had some of them writing to me myself, even though I'm not involved in any of the decision-making. But generally speaking, what I would say is that actually our reopening of schools three weeks on has, in the main, gone very well. We've only had one school closure, a small school with children with special needs, We've had some cases in schools, but actually relatively few. So I think if we can maintain the face covering wearing in the areas where kids are moving around, trying to do some of the provision outdoors, which is fine now, but it's going to be pretty miserable as we head into the winter. But schools are going well. Universities are more worrying in some ways because the young people who've come back into halls of residence, we've seen quite a few cases as they've returned, and that we really need to keep an eye on that.
Professor Linda Bald in Edinburgh, thank you very much indeed for joining us again on the programme. And I want to go now to China and Mark Murray, who is Irish and is living in Changchun in China. And people will be really interested to know, Mark, that life is pretty much close to being back to normal for you.
Hi, Claire. Yeah, absolutely. It's everything is pretty much back to normal, and everything is reopened again. We never had the social distancing over here, so I've only seen this happening outside of China. But as far as everything is concerned, we're all back to normal, except the borders are closed off to the country.
And you're a teacher, and you're back in the classroom.
Yeah, as of June, we were back in the classroom. We went to online teaching in March, and we were back in the classroom in June.
And what about your social life? The pubs, the restaurants, all operating as normal?
Yeah, everything is as normal. We just ate in a restaurant there today. But what happened was, when we went into lockdown, it lasted for about 6 weeks to 2 months. But it was at the beginning of the breakout, and everybody, I think, had a little bit more fear of it, so we kind of stuck to the rules very strictly, and but it paid off in the end. So now everything's reopened, and we're pretty much virus clear.
But you have to show, don't you, on your phone, on the app on your phone, that you're clear to enter.
Yeah. So if you're going to travel on public transport, they still ask you to wear a mask, and you have a health code. So everybody, it's like a QR code on your phone. They will scan it. It will turn green, and they will know that you don't have COVID-19. And it can also, if it pops up that it's yellow or red, this would be due to temperature testing, then they would just be refusing on the public transport.
Okay, is that the same for access to work or restaurants or any public place?
No, it was at the beginning, but it's all become a lot more relaxed. At the beginning, every shop you walked into, there'd be someone standing outside the front with a temperature gun to take your reading. But now, over time, less and less people started doing it. And today, I'd go out without a face mask, go to a restaurant. I wouldn't even take a face mask with me if I'm not going to use public transport.
That's extraordinary for us to hear that here, Mark. Are people concerned
I hope it's a bit of light at the end of the tunnel that, you know, we will get through this and things do get back to normal, you know.
Is there a danger, though, or are people concerned that there's a danger that everyone might just get a bit too complacent there?
It is, but you see, I think that's where the border control comes into play. There's still nobody allowed back into China. So at the moment, we could leave China, but we wouldn't be able to come back in. So this is like where our life and our jobs are. So I think we're all waiting for the rest of the world to catch up so that we can completely get back to normal. But as of now, I have no fear of it. Nobody really seems to. It's kind of been a thing of the past. We were getting updates every day before with the statistics and how many in each city, and that's all stopped. It's like a thing of the past now.
Right, and is this down to the efficiency of the testing and tracing system? Because in May, when there was an outbreak in Wuhan, there was a big swoop down on that area. It was locked off and the virus was hunted down.
Yeah. It was taken very seriously. And I know from I'm married to a Chinese girl, and she was telling me when it was shown that it was taken so lightly in Europe, China were kind of shocked that like people were still having parties and get-togethers and stuff like that, where we had a much bigger fear of coronavirus when it hit. So I guess it was new. We didn't really know much about it, but there was nobody, like not even teenagers, no one was risking getting together in groups at the beginning, you know? And I think that was the main thing. And I think for the rest of the world, it just everybody kind of got used to it and said, oh, well, if I have it, I'll still go out and so on. But I think China had a much bigger fear of coronavirus.
And the difference now might be, Mark, that, you know, the testing and tracing system that you have in place there is such that if there is an outbreak anywhere, it's caught really quickly.
super quick. Like it's, you know, if you're going to be going, using public transport, I would say I use my health code now maybe 4 times a week, depending on entering a shopping cinema there recently. I went to the cinema there last week for the first time, and I had to give my health code in the cinema, where that would be probably one of the high risk buildings to be going into. So we're still checked. So if something happens, if someone blinks red in their health code, it's caught immediately.
Mark, it's been really interesting talking to you. Yep. Thanks very much for joining us from China. That's Mark Murray. We're going to be talking about nasal ailments in just a moment with GP Maura Finn. That's after this quick break.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.